Welcome to Kidney Talk, a program of Renal Support Network, a show that streams health, happiness, and hope to the kidney community. You can download all Kidney Talk shows from iTunes and find a variety of resources to help you navigate this illness at rsnhope.org. Please welcome your host, Lori Hartwell, who has lived with kidney disease since the age of two.
Well, welcome to Kidney Talk, everyone. I am very excited to talk about this subject that really needs more attention. And if you ever see me posting on any of the boards on social media, you will know that I constantly make sure that people are aware of this product. And I think it's one of the biggest issues in kidney disease, and it needs to be more properly addressed. And that's the issue of fluid management in hemodialysis. I think we have it vastly wrong, and we could be doing it better. So today we have Dr. Jim McCabe, who is a board-certified nephrologist from Wilmington, North Carolina, with over 25 years of private practice experience, and has worked in many clinical trials to develop new medications to help people suffering from kidney disease. His experience includes his teaching students and medical residents with the University of North Carolina. He has devoted much of his career and passion to managing fluid in both non-dialysis and dialysis patients to ensure the safety of patients so they can live life to the fullest and feel as normal as possible. So welcome to the show, Dr. McCabe.
Thank you, Lori. It's a true pleasure to be on your podcast here and to talk about one of my favorite topics.
Well, I think we may be kin from way, way back because we are cut from the same cloth. And I cannot tell you how excited I am to have somebody that meets my level of determination to change the community on how they address fluid management. So let's just get right into it. And what is fluid management before we get into fluid overload? Because I think it's a term like, oh God, they're trying to manage my fluid. What does that mean?
It's really balancing your body to prevent retention of fluid, but also to get rid of fluid. And really, it's almost like a seesaw. If you're on one end of the seesaw or the other, you're either fluid overloaded or you're fluid under, your volume depleted. So it's really staying in balance with that seesaw of life of trying to keep fluid at a balance in your body. And that's really what the fluid management is about. We don't want it too low, where there are patients that show up to dialysis where they may have been having GI problems or just not eating and drinking, and they're actually losing body weight, and we pull fluid off when there's not fluid. And then just on the opposite end of the spectrum, where the majority of patients that come in to the, at least in the United States, we have a much greater problem with fluid retention, and part of that is diet, part of that is several other reasons, but we want to keep that balance and that seesaw balance.
Well, and the thing is when your kidneys, who are the master chemists of your body, they just do it for you when they work properly. We don't even pay attention to it. They just magically work. And then all of a sudden, if you're having kidney problems in the later stages, the kidneys don't do as good a job.
Exactly. Well, I think, you know, part of it is just getting back to the basics of the kidney, which is, you know, you have nephrons, and you have a million of these when you're healthy and going along great. You know, the number one cause of kidney failure in the United States is diabetes, and yet there are a lot of other diseases that affect different parts of the nephron. It may be the glomerulus, which is where the blood is actually filtered and what makes the urine. So as you lose these filtering devices in your kidneys, and again, to go from a million down to where you only have 10% of them, can create a lot of problems with your kidneys not getting rid of the fluid or the toxins, and that's where dialysis has to come in.
Well, I know for me, with fluid management, and this is a story that haunts me, and when I was 12 years old, when I was on hemodialysis, I had outrageous blood pressure, outrageous, where I was taking, they didn't have many blood pressure medicines that were even available for children, so you were taking adult medication, but it never, and then I would crash and have seizures on dialysis, and it was acetate dialysis, full disclosure. We have better treatments now with bicarb. But it got so bad that they said, we need to remove your kidneys because the kidneys could be causing the high blood pressure. And that's a possibility, right?
Right. That's usually very, very extreme cases that we actually go in and remove it. Today, we have much better medications and other alternatives and managing fluid. But, 20 years ago, 30 years ago, when kidneys couldn't, the kidneys are diseased or have injury to them, they're like an inflamed, something that's sore and bothering your body to a point that it revs up hormones that cause sodium to retain and water to retain, and your kidneys aren't working. So they can be the source of these high blood pressures. And so for some kids, that was the only way to treat them to prevent things like strokes or seizures. But that's an extreme case.
Well, and that was, but they removed my kidneys and I still had high blood pressure. Nothing changed. And then They said, well, we have this new treatment available for children. If you want to try it, peritoneal dialysis. And I jumped at it. I didn't have one high blood pressure problem for the next 9 years. In fact, it was kind of low. It was like 100 over 60. 110 over 70 was like a high blood pressure for me. And I relate that all today to having too much fluid on my body that they didn't recognize. It was all fluid-based. It wasn't from the kidneys. No. And it really makes me upset because people think fluid is always just says, here I am, I'm in your ankles, I'm in your puffy eyes. And I know from experience, and full disclosure, everybody, I worked for the inventor of a product that we're going to talk about called the Critline from 1995. It was for 4 years until like 98. I think it was 94 to 98. I worked for Dr. Robert Stoyer, who created this product called the Critline that does blood volume monitoring. And I've been an advocate for it ever since. And I can't believe that it's 30 years later and it's not a standard of care. And most of you know that I'm chronically happy, but when it comes to this topic, I get a little chronically pissed because of the fact that I think it should be a standard of care. And we're going to talk about what the product does and how it helps patients and clinicians have better fluid management with hemodialysis. So do you want to talk a little bit about what it does?
Sure. I think, you got into the issues of fluid, and I think getting back to just at a start for some of your listeners may be new to this, may be new to kidney failure and not know all the different modalities. But, you talked about peritoneal dialysis where a small tube is inserted into the abdominal cavity. And during the day and night, there's usually fluid in the abdominal cavity that allows the water by diffusion to come out of your body into this concentrated, basically sugar water, and basically as an osmotic gradient, pull water out of your body continuously. And in keeping your fluid in balance, that can be done often in a very good way to maintain fluid as long as the cavity where the fluid's coming from is working and operating appropriately. The hemodialysis on the other side is where you take fluid out of or blood out of your typically the arm, and it's put through a dialyzer, which is what I consider a hollow filter that has a lot of straws in it, and the blood goes inside the straw. These are semi-permeable membranes. And you run a fluid in the countercurrent direction that has a certain sodium, a certain degree of electrolytes that basically buffers the blood and allows water to go across the semi-permeable membrane that you can adjust how much fluid to take off during time. What we're talking about today is the Critline, which should be a Nobel Prize winning award for him. This came available by the FDA in 1995. They approved it at that time. I integrated it very quickly into my practice, partly because I needed something else to add to the safety for my patients and to be able to manage their fluids. Where I live in North Carolina in the wintertime, people wear jackets, they change clothes, they gain weight. And unless you physically undress a patient to really then do a physical exam, it's very hard sometimes to determine their fluid status. And so anything that I could add that could help balance the fluid. And what this device does, it hooks into the machine. In the early days, this was a separate machine that we would click into the top of a dialyzer, and basically monitor the hematocrit, that's your red blood cells, through the treatment. And we can, in real time, in a non-invasive way, measure your hematocrit. And as water gets pulled off, that hematocrit and the hemoglobin, the red blood cells, concentrate. And so when they become more concentrated, that shows you can, there's a reverse relationship to blood volume change. And we could see how much blood volume is being pulled off, 10%, 15%. And we typically shoot for somewhere between that 10 and go to 15% blood volume change to prevent people from crashing and cramping and dropping out their blood pressures. And so it gave us a device, and what I considered it, it's a safety device to help our patients prevent, you know, cramps, to prevent hypotension. You know, it's not a be-all and end-all. And in the future, there may be artificial intelligence telling the crit line what to do. And I think that's already in the process, where the nurses don't have to change and adjust machines, but the machine will look at your red blood cells and tell exactly second to second what fluid needs to be removed. That is coming in the future. All this artificial intelligence, they're working on this right now. And I've been part of this a little bit to learn what their goals are. It's going to be very challenging sometimes for the FDA to allow a machine to operate your blood completely. There's always going to be a nurse involved. But I do think that there's hope in the future to be able to get this integrated. I do believe it should be a standard of care. And that's where you and I are on the same exact page, is that we both believe that.
I always think that they forget one critical component of this, and this is the patient. Because when you go on the machine and you have ever crashed or cramped, you sit there as a ball of anxiety waiting, because you don't have any warning, you don't have anything. You just start to feel like hot and sweaty and cramping, and it's like a hurricane hitting you at different levels. But I felt like I've had a 5 hurricane hit me and there's a hurricane going on. That's why I have that on my mind right now. And so, you know, what's really frustrating to me is the biggest problem I hear from people who are on hemodialysis is they feel lousy after a treatment. And I know from experience that so many people just think of fluid as fluid, and it stays in different compartments, like you said, in your body. It can stay in your tissue. It can stay in your intravascular volume. But your intravascular volume can only hold about 5 liters, right? Yep. Isn't that about for an average size person?
Yep. And then it's going to go in places throughout your body. You'll see the swelling in your ankles. You know, it'll go into your lungs. If it goes into the lungs, it may be short of breath. It can even go into your abdominal cavity, where you look 9 months pregnant and have all the fluid being retained there. So it'll find a place to go. If it goes outside of the vascular space, which it does very frequently, then on dialysis, we have to pull that fluid from outside the blood vessels back into the blood vessels, into the dialyzer to get that off of you. And that can be very, very challenging and very difficult to do. I would just say, I get back to your purpose of dialysis. Really, you should be able to walk in and walk out of dialysis and go back to doing the things you do in life. It takes some time out of your day. If that's not happening and you're feeling bad, or you're having these cramps, or you're having low blood pressures, that's where you need to contact your provider and say, I need a meeting. I need to go through this. How do I do better with my volume control? But that's why each week your provider should come around and see you and talk to you about these things. But if it needs to be more often, you know, that's where the patient has to take some of the, you know, if you're not feeling where you feel like you should be, please reach out to your providers. I mean, we're all here to help you. You know, there are often many patients in there, but at the same time, if you need to schedule an appointment in the office or you need to see them, whatever means you need to do, you need to take care of yourself and put you as the priority in volume management, because it is a team. It's a team between you, the provider, the nurse, and the technician, and you. So it's really a team effort to find that balance.
Well, and you know, one of the things, and you know, like I said, I get very upset about this topic, because of the fact, and as a patient and my peers as well, have heard, well, you know, you ate too much sodium, so it's your fault. Or you drank too much fluid, it's your fault. Or that's how dialysis patients feel. Learn to live with it. And we are actually pulling fluid out of the intravascular volume, like pushing our foot on a gas pedal with blindfolds on. And I mean, so if you're pushing the UFR rate to pull fluid out of the intravascular volume and you don't know how fast you're shifting from the tissue to the intravascular volume, you are setting yourself up for failure, period. And I mean, it's just such a no-brainer to me. I actually have got in arguments at meetings, and I mean, it's in people, I mean, get this one. Oh my God, I'm going to have a heart attack about this one. Mm-hmm. I've actually had doctors tell me this product doesn't work and it causes higher mortality. Now, I don't even know what to say, but I'm like, did you have a lecture in physics? I mean, am I being too rough? Am I being too rough when I say this?
14, 15 years ago, there was a trial that was called the CLIMB study. And this study, what they did was it's like passing out a car and saying, you're 16 years old, here's a car, go drive it. Part of the problem is that when you look at the control groups, and it really comes down to the validity of the trial that showed increased hospitalizations and increased mortality. The control group only had about a 6% mortality rate, whereas the national average at that time was about 23%. So they didn't even have a control group that was ideally matched with the other group that was on the crit line. Plus, they didn't give a lot of instructions of how to monitor and how to adjust the crit line. So, but people took that and said, okay, well, here's a trial that had about, I think it was 400 patients or so, and said, this trial showed more hospitalizations and more more patients. But again, the rates were so low that it didn't even equate to what's going on nationally or even throughout. So it was really unfortunate that news came out. So some doctors kind of hung to that. But what we do know now, and Dr. Persadio is another excellent person with this device who's given many lectures, but she broke it down that if you can get on the crit line and be able to adjust it, looking at hour by hour rates through your treatment, that reduces death and also hospitalizations. And even recently, as of last year at the American Society of Nephrology, there was a great poster that looked at using this device in the hospital setting, and we were able to reduce hospitalization length of stay by 2 days. That might not sound like much, but that's a huge financial cost to the hospital. If they can have a dialysis patient get their fluid tuned up and get it into balance when they're fluid overload. Just remember, Lori, and this data is that 30% of the admissions and also readmissions in 30 days, it's published data in North Carolina, that 30% are related to fluid overload. So if we can reduce those hospitalizations, that ultimately leads to problems with death and dying. And so, I think the bottom line is this device is not a be-all and end-all. You got to have the device to live or die on dialysis, but it can certainly make life so much easier for patients to understand their fluids. And also, when you bring the patient in and you educate them and show them the crit line, how this is working, it allows me to work as a team with the patient to fully understand their body. So it's more than just this device may not do any good. I mean, it really comes back to individual patients. Also, as you get older, it becomes much more challenging to bring that fluid from the outside into the blood vessels. Blood vessels are stiffer as you get older. If you're 18 years old, sure, you can pull fluid off an 18-year-old much better than you probably can an 85-year-old. But that's because their heart's usually better, their blood vessels are better, and the intravascular, going from the extravascular or to the intravascular space, can happen a lot quicker. And so we often are very aggressive with younger patients. But over time, that plays a horrible role on them, and so we need to do a better job. You talked about diet and sodium. I think that's important to talk about. If patients eat a lot of salt in their diet, in some countries it's enormously high. When you eat a lot of salt, it brings your thirst up. And so it often drives you to drink more. And also when they pull off too much or use a high sodium dialysate, that can also make your thirst go through the roof. Somebody was looking at anti-diuretic hormone levels in dialysis patients. This is a hormone that makes you thirsty. And when that after dialysis, it's at an astronomically high level. So you have hormones in your body that are actually driving you to drink and to be thirsty. And if you don't balance that fluid, if you start pulling off too much, that level, that hormone goes even higher. So your thirst is like somebody running a marathon and then coming back and saying you can't have water. You know, it's just not going to happen.
It's impossible.
Yeah.
We're setting the patient up to fail. And
exactly.
We blame the patient for not controlling their fluid.
Yeah.
And I find it very, very frustrating because I know, and you know, this podcast is an independent podcast. I want everybody to know that. Because I have been talking about this product for 30 years. And I don't know how much longer I'm going to be on this planet. And I want other advocacy groups, other patient advocacy groups to get on board. Because they don't get on board or even in support this. Because what it comes down to is payment. Payment drives practice. And I want to know, what is the payment of the patient who sits in the chair and feels anxious, scared to death, and a ball of nerves? And I luckily, because they do have a standalone crit line too. I just saw it at a show. They use it to put it on devices too. But in my day, they were just standalone. And
yep.
You know, I went to 500 dialysis clinics with this product as a product specialist for the company. I saw continuously, it's amazing to me. These are some things that I saw. The machine also measures oxygen.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, when you're anemic and different things, your oxygen can drop during dialysis, but it feels like nausea. I had it myself.
Yep.
If you say you're nausea and don't feel well, what do they do? This is a pop quiz, Dr. McCabe.
Well, they usually give you fluids.
They give you saline, which has
right.
salt in it.
Exactly.
You know, and I mean, it's like a vicious cycle. Like, I'm like, we're in this circle that is reminiscent of a hurricane. I was onto something here. And you never get out of it because of the fact that fluid, it hides. And when I was, you know, it was one of the best experiences of my life, but I got to go around to different centers all over the U.S. and talk about it and talk to patients and talk to staff. And I had two responses. Immediately, people got it. You know, they're like, wow, this is incredible. But I'm so busy, I don't know how I would use it.
Yeah.
Because you have to watch the machine, and that's when it gets back to AI. But I kept, you know, because we have to watch it. We just can't run. We are, and I'm not criticizing the kidney community. I want them to change. Because we're very reactive. We react to things. We're not proactive. And the crit line is a proactive tool. The blood pressure cuff is a reactive tool. Your blood pressure stays and stays and stays until, like you said, your vascular system says, I can't take this anymore. And like, you know, just like a rubber band snaps and your blood pressure drops. And so, and you have no warning when that happens. You have absolutely no warning. It comes out of the blue. And if you've ever experienced that, it's post-traumatic stress. I mean, and then you have it over and over again. And then people wonder why people don't want to go to dialysis or they don't show up or they're depressed. And I'm like, it's the answers right in front of you. They're not in control. We're human beings who want to be in control of something. And when you don't know if you're going to walk and fall off a stair, it's pretty anxiety driven. And, you know, when we would just go around and run the crit line and not do anything, observe, we had patients that had 1,000 UFR on them in the whole clinic. Their crit line never changed. Their blood volume just stayed flat, never went anywhere. I mean, this is called an A profile, right?
Yeah. Yes.
And what does that mean to you as a physician?
It means that you have extra fluid to be able to remove from that patient safely without them having cramps or drops in blood pressures. You know, the A profile is basically telling you that the machine is as a monitor is telling you that the blood volume is as much as you can pull off the patient at that moment is equal to what's in the vascular space, so you can safely remove that fluid, but that they have room to increase volume removal and that more fluid can be removed from that patient so you can get them into a balance. If you leave them at that A profile, they're going to be done with their treatment and they're going to go out overloaded. They're going to have fluid on them and are at risk for bad things of happening to them over a weekend or over a period of time. So, you know, getting back to your listeners, the three things that this device does is it monitors that hemoglobin or hematocrit continuously. So it's in real time. It tells you exactly what the hematocrit is, and that's the red blood cells in your body. And then it checks the blood volume, which is when water, that hematocrit concentrates, then the blood volume will go down into a certain percentage that we shoot for. And the third thing that you brought up was the oxygen saturation. A lot more attention is now coming into the oxygen saturation. Many of you may be in a dialysis center and you have patients that are snoring and they stop breathing, they have sleep apnea. Well, bad things happen when people don't get enough oxygen into their body, and often this can even happen within the first 30 minutes or an hour of a treatment to know that this patient needs oxygen. They have underlying lung problems, and they can be very detrimental to the dialysis treatment with blood pressure and with oxygen levels, and so this is another device to help with that. We're learning a lot more about oxygen and the importance of when to add oxygen. Often we add oxygen when somebody is short of breath, but this may be something that we proactively add to your therapy by having this device to tell us you're not getting enough oxygen during this treatment. Let me add some oxygen to allow for a better treatment so you're not getting nauseous, you're not getting short of breath, you're not going to, you know, pass out by doing your treatment. We just want to, again, I see this as a device that brings balance back into your fluids. There's a lot more work that's being done on these and a lot of different variations. You got back to one avenue, and I will disclose to your listeners that I do and have been working on the speakers bureau for Fresenius, who own and operate this device. I have to give them a lot of credit because they've actually now built this crit line into it's called a 2008 T machine, which where I was in practice for 25 years, our hospital had this on every machine. So we had built in crit lines for everybody in the hospital setting to really try to make their first treatments or their treatments to keep them in balance and to determine their weights and dry weights when they left the dialysis center. But again, the indication, and I got to give them credit, that most of their outpatient units, they are using these crit lines built into them for that purpose, is to try to reduce hospitalizations and to allow, and there's more data that has come out within the past 2 years on this showing better outcomes when you're using a crit line. Some of the other dialysis providers have left it open to the medical director of the unit, and you can set up an appointment to meet with the medical director and ask them, you know, what is their experience with the crit line? That you heard this podcast, and Lori Hartwell is my hero because she brings this to such an important focus. But crit lines are very important. Even if they have one or two, there is data that shows that the dialysis units can prevent people going into the hospital. They can also reduce these cramps and serious outcomes, but actually where the crit line can pay for itself within 1 year of people not missing treatments and not going into the hospital, and the dialysis center receives their fee for doing the dialysis. So it can pay for itself. Even if you bring in one or two or ask to have a few of them into the center, the renal therapy reps with Fresenius will come in and actually demonstrate these to the staff, and they can be very valuable. I do believe with Lori that this should be a standard of care. It should get back to where every initial treatment should be done with a crit line. Why do I do this? I had an 85-year-old lady that came in, really didn't want to do dialysis, but in fact, she wanted to go to her granddaughter's wedding. And she wanted, and she was becoming uremic, and volume was not an issue, but just the poisons had built up so much that she was not going to make it to the wedding, but wanted to just go on dialysis if it would allow her to get to her granddaughter's wedding. And I can remember her coming in, and we started dialysis. She didn't start on a crit line as an outpatient. And in fact, She taught me a lesson was that everybody starting dialysis should have a crit line because she had low blood pressures. They thought she had fluid when she did not have fluid. The second time she comes in, she has chest pain and comes in with a heart attack to the hospital and said, if this is what dialysis is, I don't want it ever again. So every time I think about starting somebody new with dialysis, they should have this device to help manage their fluid from the beginning, or in patients where you're not feeling well, bring this in. If your outpatient unit doesn't have it, but your hospital has it, you can even ask your doctor to bring you over to the hospital. Try me on the crit line, see if that will help me determine my fluid. And sometimes I would pull patients out of the units when they didn't have a crit line available, but I had them available at the hospital. You can do an outpatient treatment at the hospital. Hospital gets reimbursed for that. And they can come in and do one treatment with a crit line to align the balance back into focus where you need to be. So sometimes I would do that and really tell the dialysis units, I'm having to pull somebody out because they're not doing well. I need to know their volume. I think this is volume problem, and we need to bring them to the hospital to get it done for just one treatment. They would come in, get their treatment, and go home. But still, it sometimes required that when the dialysis centers were kind of putting up a roadblock from having this device.
This is a very extensive conversation about the crit line with Dr. McCabe. So we're going to cut this into two sessions. So stay tuned for part two.
Thanks for listening to Kidney Talk, a program of Renal Support Network. Please make sure to find us on Facebook or sign up for our newsletter at rsnhope.org. Kidney Talk is intended for informational purposes only. It is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment from your physician. Always seek the advice of your own healthcare provider regarding your medical condition.